has done a good job.
You are joining us for Political Rewind in a little bit different way today. It's just 2 o'clock. I'm Bill Nigut. Usually you hear from us in about 5 minutes from now, but because right now NPR is carrying the Senate Judiciary Committee live, we wanted to make sure we came to you on Facebook Live to go ahead with our show. Jim Galloway, of course, is here. You know him as the lead political writer for the AJC. Loretta Lepore is with us. She is a longtime Republican strategist. She was Sonny Perdue's press secretary when he was governor of Georgia. And Elena Parent, Democratic member of the state legislature. Welcome, all of you.
Hi.
All right. I want to take a deep breath and make sure our listeners know what's going on. Jim, the Senate Judiciary Committee at 1:30 today was scheduled to vote on whether to send the Kavanaugh nomination to the floor for a vote there. They'd already overcome an obstacle, a potential obstacle, when Senator Jeff Flake announced that he was going to vote for Judge Kavanaugh to be passed on, and that he would support the Kavanaugh nomination.
Yeah, that was the first development of this morning.
The drama unfolded at about 1:35. In fact, it started earlier than that as the chairman, Chuck Grassley, was in his seat. Orrin Hatch was sitting next to him, and all of a sudden things got a little intense. Is there something, Tom Faust, we should be listening to right now from the Judiciary Committee?
I believe they're breaking up.
Okay. Okay. Tom Faust says we're monitoring. So, Jim, help us understand what we're trying to absorb what just happened.
Okay. What just happened was we had some... There was an unusual recess in the Senate Judiciary Committee where you had, dear God, you had Republicans and Democrats talking to each other.
Jeff Flake, Chris Coombe, right, who are friends, went out into another right room, left the committee room, among
right
others.
Yeah, right. And Jeff Flake came back, was given the floor. He said he is recommending a one week delay in the vote. A maximum 1 week delay in the vote to allow the FBI to investigate. And then they proceeded with the vote to move the Kavanaugh nomination to the Senate floor. And it passed 11 to 10. What I think that is was he was serving notice that he is going to go this far. But if he doesn't get his delay, if he doesn't get an FBI investigation, he's going to join the opponents. And that could be a signal to Susan Collins, to any number
Lisa
of...
Lisa Murkowski,
right,
perhaps.
To Joe Manchin in West Virginia. It's something that I think has to be taken seriously.
All right. Let's do this, and then I want to bring Loretta and Elena in on this conversation. When Flake made his decision and announced his decision to support Kavanaugh, he went out in the hallway, and as he was trying to get on an elevator, he was confronted by women, a couple of women who were very unhappy that he had chosen to support Kavanaugh. We have the sound of that encounter, and we should play it because it may have had a big impact on how Jeff Flake felt when he came back into the committee room and said, we need to set an investigation. Let's listen.
I told the story of my sexual assault. I told it because I recognized in Dr. Ford's story that she's telling the truth. What you are doing is allowing someone who actually violated a woman to sit in the Supreme Court. This is not tolerable. You have children in your family. Think about them. I have two children. I cannot imagine that for the next 50 years, they will have to have someone in the Supreme Court who has been accused of violating the young girl. What are you doing, sir?
I was sexually assaulted and nobody believed me. I didn't tell anyone, and you're telling all women that they don't matter, that they should just stay quiet, because if they tell you what happened to them, you're going to ignore them. That's what happened to me, and that's what you're telling all women in America, that they don't matter. They should just keep it to themselves, because if they have told the truth, you're just going to help that man to power anyway. That's what you're telling all of these women. That's what you're telling me right now. Look at me when I'm talking to you. You're telling me that my assault doesn't matter, that what happened to me doesn't matter, and that you're going to let people who do these things into
Loretta, you were watching this unfold, as were Jim and I. We were sitting in the newsroom watching this, and I think it's not an unfair characterization to say that Jeff Flake looked ashen-faced. He looked truly as though something terribly disturbing had just happened to him.
Well, if I could just for a second correct, because I watched this actually this morning. This happened about 9 o'clock before the committee started. And he was on his way up to the committee room and could not get out of the elevator because these women were standing there waiting with for him, along with several members of the press. And he was demure. He sunk back into the elevator. He never once tried to evade.
All right. Let's talk about that in a minute. I want to welcome now the audience for Political Rewind on GPB Radio. You've been listening to coverage of the Senate Judiciary Committee, where they did just vote 11-10 to send Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the full floor for a confirmation vote. We imagine sometime early next week. But there was drama. Loretta, you'd begun talking to us about it. At the last moment, Senator Jeff Flake, who, of course, is not running for re-election, who has been a critic of Donald Trump's, although he votes for him 80-plus percent of the time, votes on his agenda 80% of the time and more, said, I'm going to support him, and then was confronted in the hallway. And thank you. You pointed out to me this happened a few hours ago. I would say that when Jeff Flake came back to the Judiciary Committee, though, to begin this 1:30 vote, he did look shaken, as though he was a little bit concerned about how he had gotten to the point where he'd confirmed this. And he said he wants a one-week break for an FBI investigation before the full Senate votes. Have I got that right?
That's right. And so this happened before he went into committee this morning at 9:30, and he was pretty sullen throughout the entirety of the remarks from the members of both sides. Lindsey Graham, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, even referenced the fact that Jeff Flake was pretty down about the whole situation during his remarks, so much as to say, look, I really want you to think about this. And then, of course, when they had the break right before the vote, he did go out and spend quite a bit of time with Senator Coons of on the Democratic side.
Yep. Delaware.
In Delaware, and have a conversation about next steps. So he's been very uneasy with this process from the get-go. Took to the Senate floor a while back to talk about his uneasiness with this and the need to do due diligence. And so what we're seeing today is an extension of that. And now I suspect that it is in the majority leader, Senator Mitch McConnell's hands to figure out how to address these calls for the FBI investigation.
That's if you're just joining us on the radio, Loretta Lepore, a Republican strategist, former press secretary for Governor Sonny Perdue. Elena Parent, Democrat in the state legislature, is also with us. Elena, so Jeff Flake gets we're going to break this down for a few minutes because this is absolutely just happening now, and we don't know the details, the background. We're trying to piece it all together. So Flake comes back, and he says, we need a break before we confirm him before the Senate as an entire body has the opportunity to vote on his confirmation. And then he votes for sending it to the floor. So the skeptic in me says, okay, he can now vote again. If the Senate does not agree to an FBI investigation, Flake certainly could then say, well, I can't vote for the confirmation, which would put it in some jeopardy. On the other hand, you know, Flake always talks a great game and ends up voting with Trump. And I can't help wonder, from the skeptical part of myself, just whether he means well, but it's not. Why didn't he vote against advancing it to the floor if he's that serious about this?
Well, there could be a procedural reason to. It's not the final vote. A lot of times in what I see at the Capitol is people will kind of vote to get things out of committee, but they haven't necessarily made up their minds about a final vote. So that's not totally uncommon. I want to commend him for at least. It seemed to me that this had gone so awry and is so damaging in so many ways, this whole process as it's unfolded over the last couple weeks, that the underpinnings of so many of our institutions are really highly at stake. And it isn't that hard to do what our Georgia Senate just did when our president pro tem was accused of sexual harassment, what every prominent company has done over the last year and before, which is hire an outside investigator to conduct an investigation. And then you have a report, and it gives you something to go on. And without that, there are literally no good choices for someone like Jeff Flake. And that's not impossible to do.
Bill, if I could, I think what we're seeing is maybe the delayed effect of some very, very important institutional concern.
Yes,
as soon as,
exactly.
As soon as that the hearing was over yesterday, as soon as Brett Kavanaugh had his word, as soon as Christine Blasey Ford had hers, you got an announcement from the American Bar Association, who had previously nominated, who had endorsed his nomination. And in fact, Lindsey Graham had kind of waved it around just a few hours ago. And they said, no, this, we need to stop this. We need to get the FBI investigating it. And I think you see some growing concern over the position of the institution of the U.S. Supreme Court. And I would point you to during Ford's testimony, toward the very end of it, you had Sheldon Whitehouse, a Democrat from Rhode Island, get up, and he was complaining about, of course, the FBI, the lack of an FBI investigation, the lack of any attempt to corroborate any of the testimony that they were receiving, and he made a pledge to Ford, and he said, "This is not over. No matter what happens, whether Kavanaugh is appointed to the Supreme Court or not, I am going to pursue your case. I am going to get you the investigation that will say confirm what you're reporting or won't confirm what you're reporting. But it's not going to end here." And I think that means you're going to have say maybe a House or Senate committee. When Democrats take control of one chamber or the other, you're going to have an investigation of a sitting Supreme Court justice.
So let's do this. Let's spend a couple more minutes trying to see if we can sort through where we expect things to go. And again, because this is breaking news, Loretta, I would ask you, I think the next step is to talk about how all of this may affect Georgia elections coming up. We're not Fox and Friends. We're not MSNBC in the sense that if you want that, they're all talking about it 24 hours a day, and I'd like to make sure we bring our own perspective on this. But Loretta, it does strike me that the Flake move at the last minute, as Jim says, reflects some unease about the possibility that this is one of those issues that will divide the country for years to come, even more than the Clarence Thomas hearings did. That was bad, but it didn't seem to cleave the country in two the way this has done. And maybe that's because of the times we're living in today.
Well, I think we're in a much more tribal time now than we were during the Clarence Thomas hearings. And I think what we've seen throughout this process is that you still see ardent supporters for Dr. Ford, and you see ardent supporters for Judge Kavanaugh. That hasn't changed. But the emotion of the proceedings yesterday has really clouded a lot of the intellectual thinking about this. So you've now got emotion kind of overriding the intellectual nature of a decision like this. And so I think what Senator Flake was trying to do today was to say, okay, I hear you. There's a lot of us, but there's a handful of us in the Senate that hear you. And we're not going to stop this nomination. If I vote no today, I stop this nomination in its tracks. And it's not ready to be stopped. And so he's saying, I'm going to let it move forward. And, you know, they have a small little caucus of people in the middle in the Senate, mm-hmm. you know, Senator Flake, Senator Collins, you know, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, even Joe Manchin, a Democrat. And I think Senator Donnelly of Indiana today came out and said that he would not support the nomination, who's in a very moderate Republican district or Democratic district.
Well, you've got Doug Jones in Alabama,
right.
in a bright red state,
right.
saying he'll oppose the nomination.
But you have some folks that are still a little bit undecided there in the middle. And this gives them some opportunity to have some more information to make their decisions also. I think the thing is that most Americans on this are in the middle. They're in the middle and they're deeply conflicted. This does give a little bit more time, though I think it's I think there are some that view this as a little bit dangerous, too, because reputations and families are on the line.
Right. All right. Yeah. So, Senator Parrott, I'm going to take a deep breath because we were all it was very dramatic watching what unfolded. So let me bring it back home, because I think Loretta has given us an opportunity to do that. If Loretta's right that, the country's watching this closely and it's going to make decisions about how they feel about the whole process, how are Georgia voters going to absorb this as we move forward? Nathan Deal, the governor, yesterday, in the middle of Brett Kavanaugh's testimony, which was the people who like Kavanaugh and want him confirmed were enthusiastic and excited about the fierceness of his defense of his own reputation. The people who tend to not like him thought that he was a little out of control and didn't display the demeanor of a judge. We'll see. You go with that, whatever you want in that. But in the middle of all that, Nathan Deal said in his tweet, "Judge Kavanaugh's record is impeccable. His testimony speaks for itself. I wholeheartedly support him and encourage our nation's senators to do the same and confirm him to the Supreme Court." What do you make of that?
Well, I was really disappointed to see that. I mean, he's an outgoing governor. This is not an area where he needs to make a decision. And I mean, anyone being honest, and I was really trying to view it, and take off a partisan lens, both of them seem very credible to me. And it was not any kind of their testimony was not any kind of tiebreaker. So then what you get to is you really do need to try to corroborate some of the folks. And we got Mark Judge hiding out in Bethany Beach, Delaware, a town very close to my heart, actually. So that was interesting for me. You know, there are people who can help shed light on this situation. So I thought it was odd and annoying and disappointing that the governor had said that.
All right. So, Jim, does he put Kavanaugh right in the middle of Georgia's elections, or does he give cover to Republicans who can now say, I'm going with Kavanaugh because Nathan Deal, my governor, says he should be confirmed.
I don't think he gives that much cover. I thought the tweet was interesting because he didn't reference Dr. Ford's testimony at all, and the phrase that he would let Kavanaugh's testimony speak for itself put a little air between him in there. I'll object to Elaine just to disagree with her just a little bit. I would say that Nathan Deal still has 3 full months to serve as governor, and there may be one or two things that he wants out of Donald Trump before he leaves.
Ah, well, that is a fair point.
And you do have Sonny Perdue in the background, kind of providing a rival power center there. So I think this was an opportunity for him to keep his foot in the Trump camp.
Loretta, how is this going to play in key races here? For instance, in the 6th District, where Lucy McBath, a woman candidate, is challenging an incumbent woman, Karen Handel. In the 7th District, Rob Woodall being challenged by a Democratic woman, Carolyn Bordeaux. How's this going to play in those districts?
Well, I think at this point it's a little hard to say because we don't know how the situation has played out, what the ultimate end result will be. But I think it's fair to say that all four of those candidates are going to be asked about this quite a lot over the next time period if this is not decided by next Tuesday, which was the current timeline for a floor vote. So it's going to be uncomfortable for them, going into the final month of this campaign. But I think the thing that we saw yesterday happen was you saw such a changing dynamic throughout the day where in the morning, Dr. Ford's testimony was so compelling that everybody thought, oh, Judge Kavanaugh, he's toast.
It's over.
Yeah. This is the end of it. And then he comes back, and then people felt compassion for him and for what he was going through. And at the end of the day, it was neutralized. We were back almost to square one. And I think so for these candidates, they can talk about it from their vantage points and their perspectives. But at the end of the day, at this current point, we're at this neutral space.
Well,
because it hasn't fully played out. Right.
If they don't investigate, because there is more they can do to have some sort of full and impartial report that comes, that can be pointed to instead of the charade that's played out so far. But if they don't do that and they ram it through, the amount of fervor in women voters will go up further.
Well, okay, so that's interesting you said that, because it strikes me the damage is already done if you support her. In other words, her treatment in front of the committee is something that a Democrat can point to.
I think it could get worse, for sure. I mean, if they did take this break and try to get an outside party.
No, my point is the way in which Republicans listened to her testimony
right.
and then said, okay, we've heard it, now we're moving forward.
Right.
I'm asking if you're Lucy McBath, if you're Carolyn Bordeaux, don't you already have...
Yes, but it's not over till it's over. And if they ram it through and they all go along, then that is a different situation
okay.
than if 3 to 4 to 5 thoughtful folks in the middle say, look, for the good of the country and all of these institutions, there is a
all
better
right.
way.
Before I give Galloway the floor, do you think, regardless of whether he's confirmed or not, this is an issue that Lucy McBath and Carolyn Bordeaux can make something out of?
Absolutely.
And in fact, be enough for them in a very what could be a close race to push enough women into their camp to win?
I think that it comes down to speak to high-level dysfunction in Washington and people being fed up with those in power. And when you're fed up with those in power, you do have incentive to vote the other way.
Jim?
I think it's Friday, and I don't know how much you talked about this earlier, but on Monday I ran up some numbers that Chris Huttman, the Democratic kind of polling operative, ran. He was looking at some state house and Senate districts, I presume Elena Perrin's district included. And what he found was, and this was almost a week. His numbers were generated about a week before yesterday's hearing. And what he found was some very distinct shifts among female voters in a generic ballot question over whether they'd pick Republicans or Democrats. Among women aged 50 to 64, which is kind of your primary working voter, those are very, very active voters. He saw a 20-point shift from 2016 to 2018 in party identification in favor of Democrats. Now you take that, and that's a week before what you saw on TV, and you add that it's either going it could either confirm those that shift, or it could explode it even further.
I think that what we're going to see is, and what we're beginning to see is that Republican women, who, you know, and I'm talking about activists and partisans who have been involved in the process, who may not have been as energized as the Democratic base has been, are incredibly energized by what has happened over the past 2 days. And they now have a reason to go to the polls.
In which direction, though?
They're going to go for the Republicans. And part of the reason for that is, and I'm talking about the base, I'm talking about the activist, the diehard partisan female voters, because they feel that the Democrats have conducted themselves in such a poor fashion throughout, not just in the last 2 days, but in the initial portion, the fact of, you know, Senator Feinstein's withholding of the letter. You can have differing opinions about that, but it has energized those women.
Do you think that in the long run, this helps? Is this good news for Karen Handel and for Rob Woodall?
Well, what I would say is I think the same thing is happening on the Democratic side. So I think those women are energized by Dr. Ford's testimony and the fact that there's not an FBI investigation, and you have this huge schism in the middle of centrist and moderate women. And you know what they're doing? They're turning it off.
Well,
they're saying, I am done right now. This is overload. I got to take a walk. I got to watch a movie. I got to take my kids out. And you know what? They're going to come back in a certain amount of time when this is all said and done. And it's going to be one point that they're going to evaluate against all the other things that are directly impacting their lives, education, the economy, and health care.
Lena?
I think that's fair. But I think we should at least briefly note that one of the troublesome things about this is all of the sexual misconduct claims against President Trump, and how it does not sit well with a lot of people that here you've got this guy, the president, who has plenty of sexual misbehavior out there, nominating this other guy, and then they're just going to ram the whole thing through. That just puts this sort of stamp of approval on, we don't care about sexual misconduct.
I want to be careful to say that it is alleged sexual misbehavior. Let's be a little bit careful.
Lots of affairs anyway.
Okay.
That's misbehavior. In my family, that's misbehavior.
Jim, yeah, I do want to pick up quickly on something that Loretta just said. And that's first of all, it strikes me that the President Trump, as he goes out and if he comes here for Brian Kemp, if he comes here and there's Karen Handel on the stage or Rob Woodall on the stage, that one of his best arguments for the success of his administration and the Republican wave in Washington is getting conservative justices on the court. If, in fact, this Kavanaugh nomination falls apart, sure, he'll nominate somebody else, but it won't happen before the midterms. And it strikes me it's possibly takes kind of a talking point away from him.
Yeah, I don't know whether it would take it away or it would increase the strength of one, whether it would underline the fact that if a Republican majority in the Senate isn't preserved, then there's not going to be a second try. On the other hand, if victory, i.e., putting Kavanaugh on the bench, kind of does you think there might be a November 6th kind of dance in the field in front of the field goals?
Okay, I do want to pick up on something you said, Loretta. I, like a lot of people, watched the entire day yesterday. You did too. I think I'm in the camp now of those people you were talking about a minute ago. I could not wait to get away from my TV set. I was just I've had enough. And this morning, as I turned on newscasts, as I was driving into work, I didn't want to listen to the sound bites that I'd heard live. I do think there are people who are terribly turned off by this dysfunction. The question is, how are they going to vote to try to change things?
Well, I think they don't like the dysfunction. They don't like the tone. And they certainly have a lot of anxiety about where this is going and what's going to happen to our institutions. The point that Elena touched on initially, there is a huge amount of anxiety about what happens to our institutions in this democracy.
I have to deal with some anxiety right now, which we're in our pledge period here at GPB Radio, as most people know. And my anxiety is we need your support to continue doing Political Rewind, On Second Thought, all the great NPR shows that we bring to you. Thanks to you, we're now doing Political Rewind 4 days a week, and that takes resources. So Bert Wesley Huffman and Bradley George are standing by to talk to you about how you can help support GPB Radio. If you're watching on Facebook Live right now, that's right. This is my Political Rewind ceramic solo cup, which, as you've heard, you can get one for yourself. If you pledge $8 a month, you get one. If you, for $10, you get two. Oh, my gosh. It's an incredible bargain. So just go to gpb.org and hit the donate button. We'd love for you to have your own Political Rewind cup. Robert Jimison and Tom Faust were monitoring the final minutes of that Senate Judiciary Committee meeting, which, what a surprise, got a little bit chaotic as it came to a close. Democrats were eager to keep talking. Republicans wanted to get out of the room as fast as they could. Tom Faust tells me they captured some sound of how this came to a rather unceremonious end. Let's listen.
I would just encourage the Democrats who we talked to before to endorse that kind of thing, that we can then move on.
Mr. Chairman.
Because of the two-hour rule, we're adjourned.
What?
The two-hour rule.
No vote.
When did we come in?
So we first heard Jeff Flake. We then heard the chairman, Chuck Grassley, followed by Dianne Feinstein. Clearly, this is an example of how this has played out all along. So, Jim, let's move on. We will watch
oh,
this.
Let's. Yes.
We'll watch this unfold. We expect, just to put a period on this, that Mitch McConnell is going to call the Senate to order tomorrow to take a procedural vote, which would move this nomination to the floor sometime early next week.
Yeah, you'd have a cloture vote on Monday, and then you'd have a final vote on Tuesday.
And we'll watch. If Jeff Flake gets what he wants, an investigation, they're not going to give him that, Loretta. There's no way they're going to give him that.
I wish I had a crystal ball to know.
All right, let's end it right there for now. Jim, let's talk a little bit about the governor's race. Both Stacey Abrams and Brian Kemp have new commercials out this week that tell us something about where they think their campaigns stand. I think that they tell us this at this point in the race. Why don't we listen to the audio of this TV commercial from Stacey Abrams? And you'll see a number of different people, different kind of ordinary Georgians making statements about Stacey Abrams. And then on the other side, Jim, help us understand what you think this tells us about how she sees her campaign right now.
As a former police officer.
As a mom.
As a teacher.
We're calling Brian Kemp out for his false and misleading attacks against Stacey Abrams. Stacey Abrams has increased safety measures in schools and toughened penalties for sex trafficking.
Brian Kemp pointed a gun at a teenager in his own ad.
Who does that?
I've seen Stacey Abrams at work, especially on her community safety plan that goes after drug peddlers and predators.
It's tough and smart.
As governor, I will always tell you the truth. Together, we can make Georgia safe and prosperous for all.
So you call that a bifurcated ad, Jim? An opportunity to attack Kemp, but also say something nice about her?
Yeah, it tells you that Brian Kemp's attacks on Stacey Abrams for walking on some legislation that was the questionable legislation to aimed at sex offenders is having its effect. You have a white male former police officer saying, no, she's okay and she's doing the right stuff. But then you immediately switch it over to two white women who are questioning Brian Kemp's emphasis on guns. And I think, you know, that tells you, number one, she's working defense a little, but it also tells you that the next few weeks she's going to be concentrating on white suburban women.
Yeah. Elena? You're obviously a Stacey Abrams supporter, is a Democratic member of the state Senate. By the way, District 42, are you?
Yes.
Which is
what? Bill, you should know. Aren't I your state senator?
Go ahead. So Abrams feels like she's in a fairly good position right now.
The guns issue still remains really hot in the suburbs. Moms are still very distressed about that issue. But so I think it was a pretty smart commercial.
But Loretta, Jim makes the point that the ways in which the Kemp campaign had been going after her over this, the vote was to toughen penalties against sexual predators. She voted against it along with only a handful of others. And she says now that the reason she did was that she found complications. One of the things it wanted to do is say a sexual predator couldn't be within a certain distance from students somewhere. So, well, bus stops change all the time, and how do you deal with that? What do you make of whether this is going to be an effective attack down the road?
So I'm smiling because I'm thinking of how hard it is for you to explain Stacey Abrams' response.
And
you're a political insider.
Yeah.
So you could imagine what, you know, someone who is not at all tracking on this would think. And I think that the ad was a grab bag. It was a grab bag. So if you're not tracking these issues on a regular basis, it didn't help you understand anything about, you see that she took a shot at Brian Kemp and you see that, you know, she's going to tell the truth. But, you know, it holistically, I don't think it it advances the narrative for her in any way.
This legislation bill is a very, very hard thing to explain. Yeah. Number one, what it did was it declared that no one on a sex offender's list shall live within 1,000 feet of a community swimming pool, a bus stop. It was very much an overreach, a governmental overreach that did not survive muster in the court.
Right.
That the legislature was forced to back away from that.
Yeah, and Abrams knows that and is super thoughtful and super smart. And she reads all the bills.
Right. But it's
a difficult vote politically.
It's a difficult vote politically.
For her, because she knew all that and is like, do I vote for something that I already know is just not going to pass muster constitutionally?
I suspect that.
Or do I think about my gubernatorial campaign in however many years?
Well, I suspect that if Abrams, instead of me, were trying to explain it, she might say what Jim did, that she felt it was overreach. She felt that it tied the hands of judges who should have some discretion in how they do things like that. She's made that point on other issues as well. We got to go to another break. Loretta's dying to get something in, but you're going to have to wait till after our next break, Loretta, when we will come back, give you a chance, and also play Brian Kemp's most recent ad. Let's go back to Bradley and Bert. Loretta Lepore, Elena Parent, Senator Elena Parent, Jim Galloway in the studio today for our final segment of the show. A couple of items to mention to you. Number one, a number of you have been asking us about the cups. If you're already a sustainer, if you already have signed up, how do you get a cup? Well, here's the answer. We went to work on your behalf. We made a deal. If you have pledged to be a sustainer to GPB over the last 12 months, all you have to do is call the pledge line, the number that you'll hear during pledge breaks. Tell them that. They'll look it up in the records, and you will get one or two cups. So I want to make sure you knew that. Number two, we have an all-new TV version of Political Rewind Sunday at 9 o'clock. Jim Galloway joins me, Audrey Haynes from UGA, Republican Brian Robinson, Caesar Mitchell, really good panel. So watch us Sunday and see the all-new Political Rewind. All right. During that pledge break, NPR reported, Jim, that Lisa Murkowski, a key vote, Republican vote on the Kavanaugh nomination, has joined Jeff Flake in saying before the full Senate votes, there should be at least a one-week delay to let the FBI look into this story.
And I'm seeing some hesitation on Republican leadership's part as to whether they're going to have a floor vote to proceed tomorrow.
Well, yeah, I would imagine, Loretta, that Mitch McConnell is going to be a little reluctant tomorrow to call for the procedural vote to move it to the floor if he knows there's going to be some hitches in this in the next couple of days.
I don't know. I mean, I think this could go either way. I mean, he could say we're going to continue on path and then delay the actual vote. I don't know the actual protocol for the Senate on things like this, but I would think that he wants to refrain from any additional delay.
Okay, let's. I told you before the break that we'd go to what Brian Kemp is putting out there since we've been talking about gubernatorial TV spots. Brian Kemp now has an ad that features a young girl and her mother who have gone through a very traumatic time, and they talk about that in this spot.
My name is Addie. My kidneys failed because of an autoimmune disease.
We were told that she needed a kidney transplant, so I started the testing to be her donor.
Right before surgery, they told us that insurance wouldn't cover the surgery at the hospital we were at.
They want to send us to Cincinnati, Ohio.
I didn't want to go somewhere else and have new doctors, new people. It was pretty scary.
I just remember coming home and I looked at my husband. He just said, I'm going to call Brian Kemp.
I mean, literally that child was on the verge of losing her life.
The next thing I knew, we were going into surgery.
When that happened, I thought, you know, it could have been one of my girls. You know, that's what drove me.
Brian really saved us. That's just how he really is.
The last voice, the mother again, Brian Kempler, it actually gets a little teared up at the very end of that. Why is that spot on the air right now?
Well, they're working very hard, as we talked about earlier, to appeal to women, and appeal, in particular those women in the middle. I think they're also trying to speak to who Brian Kemp is outside of the political arena, who he is as a person, and speak to his character and integrity. I will tell you that a portion of this ran during a much longer biographical video at the state convention a couple of years ago, and it was incredibly effective with
the grassroots. Years ago?
Well, the last state convention. Okay. I don't know if that was last summer or before that.
It's a little bit vague on details. And, you know, I'm assuming there's an implication that Kemp intervened with an insurance company to get the proper coverage.
Yes.
Coverage there. It's interesting on two levels. Number one is that Kemp's opponent, Stacey Abrams, is really hammering on Medicaid expansion, and Kemp hasn't really kind of put out his health care policy out there. It's a very foreshortened policy right now.
It is a pretty effective spot from an emotional point of view, Elena. I do think it is interesting. Jim, go ahead.
Wait, okay, well, just one point, then we'll go to Elena. It's interesting. I've got to tell you where I saw this ad for the first time. And that was on Wednesday, the day before the Senate Kavanaugh hearing, and it was at the 8:45 hour on MSNBC, just before the Rachel Maddow show.
That's exactly right. We are running short on time, but Elena, I do think in some ways it's a little ironic that the Kemp people have not put out a full health care plan, and yet they're showcasing this issue about insurance.
Right.
And
It was sort of like, this is heartwarming, makes him sound like a good guy, but I'm listening to the intro and thinking, oh, and now he's going to announce his plan to expand Medicaid. You know, or otherwise cover Georgians with health care. And so then it sort of let me down, like, well, not much there.
But I got to say, Loretta, if I were in the Abrams camp, like Elena Parent is, I would be worried that maybe the Kemp people are successfully moving him into that middle place where he can, in fact, he's not the shotgun toting pickup truck driving guy. He's now making a bigger appeal. I would be a little nervous about that.
Well, I think if you think of it holistically of how they're rolling out new initiatives in the campaign around school safety, around literacy, around teacher pay, they're talking about issues that are all moving in the common direction, which is toward appealing to women.
All right. That's it. We are out of time for today's Rewind. What a way to end the week. It's been really an exciting couple of days watching all the things unfold as they have here and in Washington. Loretta Lepore, Elena Parent, Jim Galloway, thanks for being here today. Jim, you and I are back Monday at 2 with another Political Rewind. We're going to talk about an interesting story about Tolliver County and how it's taking care of its own health care needs. We'll get to that on Monday's show.
Looking forward to it.
All right, let me go back to Bert and Bradley so they can tell you how you can become a supporter of Political Rewind.